Welcome, everybody, to the Competition Archery Media Podcast, where we explore all things pertaining to competition archery. I'm your host, PJ Riley, and with me today is our special guest, pro archer Shane Bragg. Shane, thanks for being here today.
Yeah, no problem.
So, Shane, we should start off talking. This is the middle of July. We got to start off. Boy, you're coming off two hot tournaments, ASA and IBO, where you just shot incredible. Tell us about those tournaments.
Well, go back to the ASA. I basically started as soon as I stepped onto the practice range. Me and my buddy were shooting together, and I couldn't miss. You know, it was just one of those things where numbers were just clicking right away, and I had a really good shot going that weekend. So, anytime you're finding the 12 ring on a pretty consistent basis, is usually means it's going to be a good weekend. And I stayed out of trouble, and that was it.
Yeah,
you know. I think I shot 1.8 each day, and, you know, that's limiting it as far as I'm concerned.
Saturday, you were really, the second round at ASA, it seemed like you were really, Levi even mentioned that he was thinking, hey, you know, we got kind of a lead. We don't have to put the gas to the floor here. But he said he kept looking over, and you just kept pounding 12s.
I always aim at a 12, like in the ASA game, but it's either, you know, you always go safe side number, or if you're wanting to be more aggressive. And, you know, I just had a couple that, I broke on the safe, you know, broke right at the top and hit. And, you know, that's kind of where that is, you know, hit a couple extra 12s that I wasn't necessarily gunning for, but, you know, ended up getting in the long run. So, me and him have talked about it afterwards. It did help, you know, especially going into shoot off, you know, it gave us a little bit of breathing room between us and, you know, the rest of the pack.
We should mention this is the London, Kentucky ASA. I didn't mention that in the beginning there, but this is London. And then in the shoot down, I hate to ask you about it, but we have to ask about that last arrow. Levi needed a 14. You could have shot a 12 to tie or 14 to win.
Well, with the new ASA rule, if I tied, Levi had more bonus rings than I did.
Oh, there's no sudden death. Right.
No sudden death. So I had to hit a 14 to win no matter what.
Gotcha.
Now, you can see it in the coverage right before I shoot. I actually cut the yardage off because I overthought it more than anything. And my third time shooting, or actually it'd been my fourth, two times in that shoot off. I mean, that's the time, you know, only two times I seen the Audad was the first two rounds and then in the shoot off.
Yeah.
I feel like I overjudged it, you know, the first go around, and I just kind of, like, I judged it great, and then I cut the yardage at the last second, and, you know, it ended up, you know, costing me. You know, I mean, I went with my gut, you know, pretty much all weekend, and, you know, I didn't have any other real issues. So,
yeah,
the only other one that cost me was actually my first arrow in the shoot-off was the Wolverine. I cut a yard right before I shot, and I was wanting to break kind of safe side, and I ended up breaking right on the 12 and hit just underneath it for an 8. So, I mean,
hate that target.
You know, that's another one of those targets where, you know, with the new target, I didn't have any practice on it until I got down there. So
how about
it is not a pretty target, I can tell you.
do you have a full range of targets? Do you have them all?
No. I don't have any. I have a couple targets I have at my house. I have a local club that I belong to. We keep targets out, but I mean, we don't have a full range of any by any means. You know, any of the newer ones, especially as far as the McKenzies go, we don't really have them set up. So I kind of have to go in half blind when it comes to that. So
yeah. So like you said, the new ones, the Audad and the Wolverine. So those were the ones that you hadn't seen much of. How about that? So then, so you took second in that one there, and then you go to the IBO, which had crazy, ridiculous weather.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell us, how did that one unfold for you? Same thing? Were you just feeling good with your numbers? And?
Yeah, you know, first day. So, I mean, start off, I've shot IBO for a lot of years. I've had to shoot through that exact scenario pretty much quite a few times where it's just unrelenting, just pouring all day. And you just, I mean, there's no sense in fussing about it. You just take your time and move through it. And, it was kind of strange, you know, in that weather. I'd walk up to the target and boom, numbers were clicking. I had two missed judges and they were on, you know, approximately 50 yarders, somewhere close to that range. And one of them, I had a lead on it. I mean, if I would have heard it or seen an arrow, I couldn't really hear, but, I would have had an idea, but, you know, I was just finding the 11 range. Just in that rain, I was shooting really good. And like I said, numbers were coming right away.
Yeah.
The second day in the good weather during our tournament round, I just struggled to find numbers. Like, you know, like I could stare at a target for 5 minutes and it just like wouldn't come to me hardly. So
where the day before it was working.
Oh yeah. And you know, lighting changes, you know, everything, you know, it changes, you know, with your eyes. Everybody should know that by now, that, you know, from one day to the next, you know, you can see totally different. And it was just one of the things that I managed to fight through and was, you know, to do enough to stay competitive and be close. Unfortunately, in IBO game, if you're not within a couple points, and unless something catastrophic happens or you shoot in, you know, four out of five inside out 11s in the shoot off, that's kind of hard.
Right. And that's a hard one, you know. An 8 takes you down 2, but an 11 only takes you up 1. So a little harder to come back from a bad one.
Yeah, you definitely have to limit your mistakes in the IBO. And I had a couple mistakes the second day. You know, one was a bad shot. One was just, you know, a misjudge. But, I mean, shot 2 8s each day.
And so in the finals, you ended up 3rd.
Yeah, I went in 3rd, and then I ended up, you know, I shot, I think I had the highest score for our, like, in the pro male release. I shot 4 up, I shot 2 inside out 12s, and I had a couple others where I just, you know, I had the yardage, just kind of didn't, the pin wasn't there when it, you know, when it fired, but, I mean, they were close, but, I mean, it was, you know, we had the rain started up back in the shoot-offs, especially for the pro hunters, and then it seemed to start raining again once we got up there.
So you're from Michigan, obviously, so that's more IBO country than ASA. Do you, well, you mentioned you've been shooting IBO for a number of years. How long have you been playing the ASA game?
Let's see here. You know, I've gone to a few, you know, a few tournaments here and there over the last, probably I'd say 10 years. When I was a kid, we went to, I think, like a couple of the ASA Nationals, and we shot some local, you know, some Michigan ASA for a little bit. But my first year of actually, like, the first year I tried in an ASA, I shot all 7 tournaments, I think it was, that year. I shot my way out of semi-pro, and I think that was in 2015.
15, okay.
Yes. So that was, you know, that I had a goal at the beginning of the year was to shoot, you know, shoot my way into pro. And that's what I did.
Yeah. Nice. So you've been shooting ASA pro since 16.
Yes. So this would be my 5th year, I believe.
And so tell us, Shane, you're not a full-time archer. You have a full-time job.
Yeah. I do commercial and industrial heating and cooling and pipe work. I'm a pipe fitter in the local union.
How does that work for you then, balancing professional archery and being a pipe fitter, union pipe fitter?
Well, I mean, I don't shoot archery to make a living. So, you know, I gotta spend a lot of time, you know, going to work and, you know, a lot of times it's a lot of, you know, it's hard work physically, and, you know, it's physically demanding, and, you know, especially in the heat, you know, working on a lot of rooftops and stuff like that in the summertime. So, but, you know, a lot of times if I do come home to practice, I mean, it's not necessarily good practice all the time, you know, because if you're wore out and stuff like that. So, you know, just got to kind of balance it enough, and then, you know, put in the practice where you know it's going to count, whether it be, you know, if I can try judging or just going out and just making really good shots, you know, because, you know, by the time I get to judging targets, it might not be till 5 o'clock in the evening, and, you know, lighting's a lot different. So you can't really go, you know, we don't judge targets at 5 o'clock in the evening, right, you know, for tournaments. So, yeah. So I work a lot on, you know, making sure that my bow is, you know, shooting well and shooting like Field and Hunter and stuff like that after work, local club, and, you know, making sure everything is where it's supposed to be.
So I got to ask, human nature, nothing against the pro guys who shoot archery for a living, you know, much respect to them, not anything against them, but it's got to feel kind of good that you're a guy who's working a job like everybody else, and you can go out there and hang with these guys, hang with the Levi Morgans and Dan McCarthy's. That's got to feel good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it does. You know, when I was growing up, obviously there were some different names that were leading. But, yeah, as of right now, I mean, every tournament I go and shoot with these guys, you know, it's hard not to notice, I mean, the fact that there's just no relent between, you know, the top archers, Levi, Dan, you know, a lot of those guys that are just, you know, to be able to toe the line with them and to compete with them on a, you know, bi-weekly basis, more or less, going to these tournaments. It does feel good. I mean, obviously, we're all human. We all make mistakes, but the name of the game is definitely limiting your mistakes. But also, I mean, you got to hit the bonus rings, which is tough. I mean, you've seen our ranges. A lot of times our ranges aren't very easy.
Nope. So I can't see. Yeah. Most of those targets you guys are shooting at, I would be aiming at spots. I can't see any of those rings.
Right.
Let's go through your setup just to see what it is so I can get an idea of what you're seeing. You shoot for prime. You're shooting the nine, the black nine?
Yeah, I'm shooting the black nine. I switched to it a couple months ago, and since, you know, when I switched, I mean, it's great. It shoots great, holds really well. Now, as far as my picture setup, right now I'm using Hamsky Peep with the number two clarifier and a true ball or true ball release, Excel sight and scope with a six power lens.
You do shoot a six. Okay.
Yeah. I've been shooting a six power lens for, since I was a teenager, so probably 15, 16 years.
Yeah, yeah. So you can see, assuming the lighting is, you know, at least decent, you can probably see most of those bonus rings.
I wouldn't say
probably
necessarily
not in London.
The bonus rings. well, like, it depends on the target and, you know, and the lighting, but a lot of times I can see the 10 ring or, you know, or especially on the McKenzie targets, I can see the core, which will get you where you need to be more times than not, you know, just going off the core line.
Yeah, yeah. In London, what were you able to see? I couldn't see anything in there.
Well, I mean,
was so dark.
The second day, I mean, me and Levi were struggling to see early, and, you know, Joseph Goza, he started off and he shot four out of the first six 12s, and we're like, we can't even see. How is he doing this? And then, you know, once the lighting started coming around, we started getting them. But it was just another one, you know, the second day there, it was one of those days. It just, when you hit one, you were kind of feeling, you know, you're feeling good because you know that not many people were pounding the 12 ring just because it's hard to see.
Yeah. Now, with that round, while we're on that subject, So tell me about what you think about Kaylee Johnston. I mean, she shot a score on the same range as you guys that would have qualified her third in the men's division.
Yeah, I mean, she shot great. I think she would have been tied for third or something.
Yeah,
coming
there was
in.
A tie, right?
Yeah. I mean, that was awesome shooting. There's no doubt.
Wasn't an easy course.
No, it wasn't. You know, the first day was a lot better lit to hit some 12s, but the second day, you know, I mean, it's getting it done. You know, hanging in there and
yeah,
because I mean, there's a lot of good names that shot great. You know, great scores. She's one of them.
That was amazing.
Put it on them.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that. Well, Shane, do you play the indoor game much?
Over the last few years, I guess. I don't know, 5 years or so. I've been shooting a little bit more. Obviously, you know, some of the best mental preparation you can do is standing there 20 yards and shoot at a spot, right?
Right.
It's not a lot of people sounds easy, but it's really not, as anybody that's ever done it knows. I've worked pretty hard at practicing for whatever tournament. If I go to a tournament, like last few years, I've gone to Lancaster, and you know, each year I kind of set a goal, and I've hit it pretty much every year. I've set a goal. It's just, you know, I need to put a little bit more time into it, and make the shoot off and then make it through the first, you know, through a round of elimination and just kind of go from there. And, it's a different game. I mean, the pressure in the indoor game, you know, when everything's riding on it to not miss a 10 is good, you know, and that's what I shot a 650, I believe, in Lancaster with no nines.
Okay. Yeah.
So it was clean, but I mean, it's one of those things where it doesn't feel the same when you're in practice, you know.
Right.
just gotta, you know. I've been working on it. Obviously, like, I'm not looking to go make a living at it. I can tell you, it's. But I do practice just to at least keeping, you know, mental preparation and good shooting form. Trying to start, you know, for the start of the year, you know, because it's after, you know, hunting season. You know, we don't get the reps in like we need to.
Well, that raises the question for me. So you shoot the unknown game, ASA and IBO, which requires you to have that skill as well, judging. What would you say is your better thing? Do you think you're a really good judger or a really good shot? Or, you know, do you think one is better than the other for you?
Anybody who's been around shooting an unknown game for long enough, there's the answer is mixed. You're gonna have those days where you shot great but judged really poorly, and then there's gonna be days where you judged great and shot poorly. You know, I've been judging for a long time, judging yardage for a long time. I don't get enough practice at it, but I do rely off a lot of my years of experience doing it.
Yeah.
Right now, I mean, it's still the same. I mean, I might have a okay day shooting the bow and not score very well, because I didn't judge that well. But then, you know, it seems like you can judge great and still score. You know, it's all about getting that in the right mix, and you know, sometimes you get both of them to click at the same time, or you know, you just put in the work and, you know, get it real fine tuned and you're shooting well and go out there and start hitting both. But it's one of those things where it's almost everybody can tell you that had one of each, you know, days. shot amazing, judged poorly, and judged great, shot poor, you know.
What is your judging style? I've been talking to some archers about that. Ground judges, target size. How do you approach a target?
For me, like especially earlier in the year, I ground mostly because, you know, I've tried the whole practicing over snow for judging yardage. It turns out it doesn't work.
Yeah.
So you know, I rely a lot on ground, even throughout the year. But as I get out there and judge more, I mean, there's, I mean, I have a lot more times where I walk up to a target and just look at it. And it just, I mean, it's there. So, and that's, I mean, I work on that more than anything, you know, as far as the ground, a lot of that's confirming, but you know, practice, you show up to a new facility and, you know, you gotta, you know, check, you know, what, how you're seeing things in certain lighting. So, but I try to rely on a good mixture of everything. Utilize all your tools. Sometimes one's better than the other. And, you know, usually by this time of the year, me judging, just looking at the target body size is more reliable than the ground.
Now, you come up. This is always my issue. I come up, boom, a number hits me, and then I start second-guessing. Do you tend to follow the second guess, or do you stick with your instinct?
A lot of times it's, you know, stick to your instincts a lot, you know, but you also have to pay attention. You know, you're out there, there's a lot of tools. So you're shooting in a group of guys and, you know, watching arrow flight, you know, how far above the 10 or 12, whatever, wherever it lands, how far above, how far down it comes, listen to, you know, the distance, you know, how long it takes for the arrow to hit.
Yeah.
So, and if the three out of, you know, three people in front of you all shoot low, I mean, chances are you're going to need to add. So it's one of those things where you got to utilize, but I mean, we all second guess ourselves. And a lot of times it does actually end up hurting you, especially, you know, when you're seeing things well, and then you walk up to a target and you start second guessing yourself, and you're just kind of like, why are you doing that? You've judged all these right before, just kind of, you know, let it go. And more times than not, if I go with my first number, it'll be better than my second guess.
Yes, it's the discipline part of me. I that's what I think after I second guess myself, shoot low, and then say, darn it, I should have gone with my first number.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you talk yourself right into it. I mean, yeah. That's especially in a tournament when you do that, you just giving away points for, you know, free points. It's like, you had it. You just gave it away.
So for a union pipe fitter, you have local tournaments around you, I'm sure, that you could shoot in Michigan. You don't do the archery thing for a living. Why do you shoot professional archery?
As far as where I stack up with competition more times than not, that's who I belong shooting against. I've shot through most classes, as far as, you know, from youth. And then I went to, open class, MBO and IBO, and then like open A or something and ASA. And then I went from there, I just went right into semi-pro cause that's where my competition was, and, shot my, you know, like I said, I shot my way out of semi-pro and, you know, having to shoot with the, you know, the pro, it takes a little while to get used to the level of competition because there is quite a bit of difference. Even if the scores may not be higher than say a certain level, usually the courses dictate that they are,
right.
You know, that they're a lot more difficult, and that's, you know, that's the way it's supposed to be, in my opinion.
So you saw a big difference going from semi pro to pro.
Usually. Yeah. I mean, so like in IBO, my first year, in fact, I think I shot a good enough score to win a few of the tournaments, and I wasn't even cracking like top 10 or barely cracking top 10.
Really?
And typically, they move our courses around from day to day. You know, when we shoot our course the day before or after, you know, and they change the targets around. But typically ours is a little bit longer, you know, not always, but they do change it around towards themes. You know, we have a longer course.
Right.
And But yeah, it's there's no big mistakes really, unless you just absolutely pound bonus rings.
Yeah. So you guys, I mean, me coming out there, not being in your shoes, I would just expect that the pro course is going to be longer, that it's going to have a lot of 40, 45, 50-yard targets. When Don Bailey, the guy who runs ASA, when he sneaks in a 30-yarder, like he always thinks, oh, well, they've been shooting these long targets, I'm going to give them a close one. Does that mess you up, or are you thinking, oh, man, there's an easy one, I'm going to get it?
I wouldn't necessarily say it messes you up. Sometimes it does, because, I mean, you're not used to, like, especially if they put it, like, really close.
Yeah, yeah.
You have a hard time dialing your sight that low because you're not used to seeing them at that range. I wouldn't lie if I didn't tell you that I don't really practice in that range as far as judging targets.
Oh,
so
okay.
Not a whole lot. So when your average is, your closest target is roughly 35, 38 yards, somewhere in that range, sometimes on a range. There's not a whole lot of need to practice at, 20 few yards, 30 yards.
Sure.
So yes, there's a little bit of that. And then, also, I mean, if you don't hit it, you feel like you're losing points. And then if you shoot an eight or something like that, I mean, it's like, it really kind of gets to you a little bit. Right. Exactly. Or you're trying too hard, or you just make a mistake on it. And you feel like, everybody else either made 2 to 4 points up on you and on a gimme, so to speak. I mean, there's no gimmies out there, but as close to one as we can get.
As you can get, sure. Don told me one of the things that he also likes to do is he likes to take like 3 or 4 targets in a row and put them at the same distance, because he said he's heard from people that will be like, he couldn't have put that one at the – I just shot that same distance. It's got to be a different distance.
Yeah, I mean, that does play with your psyche a lot more, when you do that. I mean, a lot of people have done that through the years, and – It's hard for you to shoot a target from the same distance, you just shot, and it's just human nature or our nature out there. And, when they bringing you in and out a lot, where you got to use your sight, to where, at least where it's 4 or 5 yards difference, and it kind of starts getting in your head, and then all of a sudden you put a couple in a row that are close to the same, you're like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
So
what do you think about it? We hear people talk a lot about that. Oh, 3D, that should all go to known distance. Unknown is dying. You're someone who lives in the unknown world. What are your thoughts on that? Or, I'm guessing you probably wouldn't like to see it go away.
As far as unknown goes, is I've got a lot of time invested in judging yardage. Through the years of practice and everything else. And it's a skill that I have. I mean, I can judge yardage quite well. There's quite a few, of us that can judge great. I mean, and I don't think that it should go away. We're trying to see who's a great shot now, but 3D yardage isn't necessary. I mean, it's an all around game, aiming isn't the easiest on a 3D target either.
Yeah.
If you can't see anything, I mean, you don't have a precise spot that you have to aim at all the time. And that's kind of, there's a mixture of things in this sport, and an unknown yardage, I believe, is, it's one of those things where a lot of guys has put in a lot of time, and it's a pretty difficult skill to master. And I understand the frustration in it. A lot, people that haven't, been shooting 3D archery or, for that long time and never really had to do it. It's time consuming to stay sharp on it. I understand.
Right.
But, I don't think it should go away. I think 3D archery that's what it was based around in the first place. It was unknown yardage. Now, granted, things have come a long way with range finders and such like that. But it's, I mean, if we're turning this into a sport, you know, this was what the sport was. So I don't know. There's a place for both.
I am just impressed by that skill. And as you mentioned, you know, Shane Bragg shows up at a marked yardage tournament, you're probably going to do pretty well hanging up there with the upper group, especially up where you live there. But like you mentioned with the yardage thing, that may be there one day and the next day it's not, even at your level. You know, that just right. always impresses me. And then when you are on, I mean, to be able to tell the difference between 48 and 46 yards, to me, that's just mind-blowing because I cannot do it. If I get it, it's luck. But for you guys, it's not luck. You're going up there and saying, I know that's 48 yards and not 46. And so I'm always impressed by that skill. But the question is, when Shane Bragg goes out bow hunting, do you have a rangefinder?
I do have a rangefinder.
All right. Probably a little different, too, from a tree stand and things like that.
I mean, it is. And, you know, if you're talking ethics, too, the ethical thing, just kind of winging arrows at animals at, you know, unknown distance, especially under pressure, you know, isn't necessary. But I have been in the situation, too, where, you know, like walking in, if I didn't have a rangefinder handy, I had to judge yardage to get the shot. And, I mean, if you don't, you know, don't have a, like, I had to do it at full draw. So, you know, you just kind of, you know, going off of that. And you're talking about animals where you don't know their body size, you know, you're trying to figure it out on the fly. I mean, there still is a little bit there to, you know, you kind of need to be able to do to some extent. I don't know of any real hunters that don't go into the woods without a rangefinder.
Right.
That's also, you're talking, trying to limit your mistakes as well. I mean, no one wants to shoot under a 180-inch deer because they didn't know how far it is.
Yeah. Bigger stakes there, too. If you shooting a five, that's one thing. But, yeah, hitting one bad, that's not a good thing.
Right, exactly.
Obviously, there's some correlation between being able to judge a 3D target and being able to judge a deer. But in the hunting situation, is it different? Do you find it to be more the same or more different?
As far as judging, like distance? Obviously from a tree stand, it's totally different. But on the ground, it's mostly going to be, you know, you're looking at trees, you're looking at objects, you're looking at the ground, you know, judging the ground to the deer. Cause like I said, I mean, a deer could be, 225 pound dressed deer, or it could be 180 pound dressed deer. You don't know that. And if you're looking at the deer, if you have just a quick glance, you can get an idea of the body size, but at the same time, you're not 100%. So you gotta use your best ability and use everything at the same time. Plus, you know, time flies in situations like that. And, you know, you just got to make your best judgments.
Was target archery something that you got into as kind of an outshoot of bow hunting, or were you doing target archery before you were bow hunting?
Well, my dad is the one who got me into archery. And the answer for him would be yes. The reason he got into shooting archery, you know, target archery, was because he wanted to become a better bow hunter.
Yeah.
And then, you know, as, you know, we were growing up, my dad had me out on the range, actually when I was 2 years old, flinging arrows at 3D targets.
Nice.
You know, so I've been shooting for quite a long time and started being obviously more competitive as I got older. And 7, 8, 9 years old, you know, started going to nationals, I think 8 or 9. And, you know, going from there. Yeah.
Yeah. Has it always been, other than indoor, has it always been 3D, or like, do you do any of the feet of the field, whatever, you know, any of the other games?
It's always been 3D. The feet of thing and the field, I mean, I love field and hunter, It's amazing practice, especially our local club, Washtenaw Sportsman's Club. It has a great range, of uphill, downhills, you're talking about out the 80 yards and everything. And so I've never competed in a tournament. I mean, I'm always kind of busy doing other things, like 3D tournaments and such, but, I do enjoy it. It's a very tough game. The feet, shooting it around dot and the field, it's never really been my thing. I've never done it, so I couldn't even tell you the atmosphere other than what I've seen, through media. So, it's been, 3D, basically for most of my career. And then indoors, just been more, I've shot indoor spots, in leagues and such for years, but never tried to become, a great spot shooter or anything like that until the last few years. Started really working at it and trying to get those spot games up.
Do you change your setup between indoor? I know I've talked to some 3D people and they like to keep it the same wherever they're shooting, but some will, set up specifically for indoor, lighter poundage, that kind of thing.
No, I haven't done it. It's something that, I might work on here next year, but, cause I shoot 70 pounds all the time and I shoot 70 pounds indoors. So after a while indoor, kind of start, on the shoulders, I need to kind of slow down a little bit. So, I mean, you feel it, after a while, because there's so many just repetitious shots.
So for people who are listening who don't understand this, so Shane's talking about shooting 70 pounds, and at the Lancaster Classic, we shoot 60 arrows in a row. So he's shooting 70 pounds 60 times. That's impressive. And shooting
not
a 650.
Not including practice.
Right. Yeah, not including practices. And shooting a 650 with no nines. That's stout shooting there.
I started shooting 70 pounds. I like the holding weight, for my draw length and getting the correct spine and out of arrows, that's where it landed me. But now there's speed limits in both IBO and ASA, but it's always nice to have a little higher arrow than it is to have a lighter one,
You would have to, you're what, like 30, 31 inches draw length?
My AMO is 30 and a quarter. So okay. With a loop, it's right around 31.
So for you shooting at 70 pounds, you must have to do something to actually slow down your arrows, I would think.
Definitely. Typically it's a little bit stiffer arrow with more point weight in it. And, I actually for both IBO and ASA currently, I'm shooting X cutters, one with 130 in the front and one with 150 with some different veins between the two of them. But basically almost identical arrow. They're just, 25 grains apart.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because if you went 100, a typical sort of hunter setup, 100 grains in there, you'd probably be blowing way past 300 feet per second.
Yeah, I think right now with this bow, I can get roughly about 320 if I was pushing 5 grains per pound or whatever. But I don't really need to. So it's nice to be able to kind of stack some weight in the arrow and,
right.
And also I feel it does help when have that little bit of extra kinetic energy when you're hitting arrows in the rings and it kind of pushes.
Oh yeah.
They don't deflect as bad. I feel so.
That's a good point. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that. If it was a super light, you might be more likely to really kick.
Yeah, if I had 90 or 100 grains in the front, it typically glances a little further than something with a little heavier point weight. So,
was it a big jump? This is your first year shooting prime, and that's from appearances, that is a different looking bow with the parallel cam system there. Was it a big adjustment for you coming into a setup like that at your level?
Not really. It takes a little bit of getting used to, it's a different platform. You got to learn it. And by learning it, you spend a lot of time with it when you first get it and kind of see what it likes, what it doesn't like, and, kind of tweak it from here to there. But I mean, overall, the bow feels, pretty similar. It's a two cam design, especially now with the Black 9 with the, you got the adjustable mods, you can kind of make it feel how you want it. I like holding weight. So I'm shooting like 21, almost 21 and a half pounds of holding weight on it. I got it feeling, quite well, but it's like anything else. If in order to be able to work on it and tune it and get it to shooting, at its maximum, you need to spend time with it. And that's kind of what you do. So
I can tell you, being associated with a pro shop, we really liked not having to have 800 different cams in stock. The rotating mods was awesome.
I think that it's, what they've done there, they've done quite well with that design. It feels pretty darn good. And, from that standpoint with the pro shops, I know that they're loving it, that they can just take a bow off the shelf and be like, well, what did you want it? And, a little tweaking here and there and get the stops right. And then there you go. You got a good shooting bow.
I should ask, what is your local pro shop? You probably do a lot of your own work at home, obviously, but what's the local pro shop that up your way?
Well, MJC Archery in Royal Oak, Michigan, got Jim Morrow. I've known him for a long time. Me and my dad's been kind of his staff, on his staff shooters for almost 20 years.
No kidding.
Jim, he's a very knowledgeable guy. He's been in the industry for a long time. He was a former pro, but he kind of had to step back from that to run his shops.
That's awesome. Well, obviously this is the craziest year any of us have experienced. Right now, all things, good Lord willing, there's two ASAs and one IBO left. Do you have any kind of goal for those tournaments, or when you're looking ahead, what are you thinking about?
Just to go there and try to put a bunch of good shots together and be competitive. If I can be fortunate enough to be there, then that's what it'll be. I'm not expecting to go out and win all of them by any means, but at the same time, I don't expect not to.
Right, right.
You got to go. I'll just go in there and do the best I can. Give it a good effort and we'll see where it goes. Cause I mean, there's so many great shooters in this class that, to be arrogant enough to say that you're going to beat them all every week. Levi, he does that quite a bit, but, it's just one of those things where, you still gotta be humble. If you find success, there's plenty of guys in there that are willing to step up and put you back in your place, as far as that goes. So just got to go out there and do what we can do.
A finish like you had at the ASA, is that more, I'm sure that was a kick in the gut when it happened, but is it also a motivation factor? How did you feel after that one happened?
Just basically you had the winning arrow in your bow and, just happened to fall just short. It motivates you, coming into the pro class, until you get to stand up there and know that you belong, when you go out and start proving that, like, I belong in this class and I can compete with these guys on a, you know, on a weekly basis or whatever you want to call it. It kind of gets, throws a little bit more fuel on the fire, so to speak, to say, hey, you can beat these guys. It does. Obviously, but missing that last shot, it's disheartening, you know, but it just, you just want to work harder to get that win. And, you know, that's what we're looking for.
All right, Shane. Well, congratulations on the successes you've had so far this season, and we wish you the best going forward. And thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks. No problem.
All right, folks, that's another episode of the Competition Archery Media Podcast. You can find us on all the platforms where you find all of your favorite podcasts. And don't forget to go back through our library. We've got lots of content there. Thanks for joining us today.